Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast, where we discuss empowerment, growth, and inclusion for individuals with autism. And now your host, Dr. Carol Baltazar.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. B. Welcome to the Autism Mom MD podcast. First, I want to quickly remind everyone that my podcast is intended for educational purposes only and is not medical advice. Please talk to your doctor if you have questions. The views and opinions expressed by me and my guests are our own personal opinions. Today's episode highlights COVID-19 vaccines. My guest today is Dr. Jen Trachtenberg and is known to her patients as Dr. Jen. She is a nationally renowned parenting expert, board-certified pediatrician, author, spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics, and an autism mom. Dr. Jen has appeared numerous times on NBC, The Today Show, CNN, Fox News, ABC World News Tonight, as well as on The View and The Doctors. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Jen. Hi, Dr. Jen.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me today.
Oh, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Sure. So as you've already mentioned, I'm a pediatrician. I've been in private practice for almost 25 years now, taking care of kids all the way from newborn through young adulthood, some with special needs as well, families that have children with special needs or chronic illnesses as well, too. And I have three children of my own. I was actually pregnant when I started my practice, when I finished my residency and went right into private practice. Oh. So that was sort of busy juggling things right from the start. Right. I was pregnant with my first. And as I said, I have three children. My first, my oldest has autism. Okay. And he's 24 now. And then I have two other typically developed children who are ages 21 and my youngest is turning 18. So two boys and a girl. And yeah, it's definitely a whole juggling act, with especially being a special needs mom. So, you know, I certainly get that for the listeners from both roles, from being a mom, but also being a professional, a pediatrician, and helping families care for their kids to get services and things that they need, but also just for their children and the families to have like a really positive experience in the pediatrician's office, because I know how to talk to the kids and I know how to get them to respond. So I think that's really, you know, that's really what's so helpful, I think, to moms when they can have a pediatrician that they feel like they're on the same wavelength with and can understand their child.
Right. When were you aware that your son has autism?
So I think probably that sort of 15, 18 months, no, I'd say more like 18, 21 months, mm-hmm. Really when I sort of that he wasn't really following directions as he should be, following commands like he should be. And he had some interesting things at the beginning. He actually was hyperlexic, which to the audience maybe listening is he was able to sort of read and know words much more quickly than he was really able to speak to know how to communicate. But he was able to read. That was sort of very interesting. So I just obviously thought he was a super genius at two when he could read the words from flashcards, but he really wasn't really responding to the pictures or things like that. So it was sort of an interesting thing. And then it sort of kind of developed from there.
Right, right. So when he was diagnosed, I mean, because my son is, oh my gosh, he's 19 now. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, I think, you know, we're kind of in that similar age range. Yes. So my son was diagnosed with Asperger's. So, and then later on it fell into autism spectrum disorder. So was he diagnosed pretty early or?
So he was, yeah. So he was diagnosed somewhere definitely with early intervention. So mm-hmm. definitely with that, it was before age three. And again, you know, it sort of developed a little bit more over time. I agree. It was like many years ago and it's very different now. Yeah. So it was very hard to get services. And I was really like integral in planning a school program for him and getting him ABA hours, which he did when he was younger, because it was really sort of new and it was hard. You know, there wasn't really any consistency to things. But yeah, he was definitely within the 2 to 3 year old range at the time.
Wow, that's awesome.
When he was diagnosed.
That's great, because mine was diagnosed much later. I think because we fell into like the category of like people thinking that, you know, he's a boy, so he's maturing later. So I mean, his actual diagnosis.
And also just to also just to say, also, as you said, I don't know him now, but you said at the time, like he was sort of diagnosed with Asperger's. So sometimes when they're a bit more high functioning, especially with their language and stuff, people often don't think that they have autism because that they're able, they're speaking and they're knowing their ABCs and they're, you know, they're doing things, but that really could be an issue also for later diagnosis.
True. So what's the earliest age now that we can detect ASD? I mean, your son was diagnosed pretty early.
I think it really depends. Yeah, it definitely can be very early. You know, we certainly do screenings for kids all the time, particularly at 18 months. We really do a screening in your pediatrician's office. They do normally, and then obviously, you know, if there's more issues going on, you know, then they can obviously be sent to a specialist for further testing as well too. Wow. And obviously, as you know, there's newer things coming out with vision and different things looking at them and studies looking at them, maybe being able to even diagnose earlier. And we know earlier intervention is so important for these kids. It really, really makes a big difference. And so flooding them early with the therapies and things can really, really be helpful. So we do want to make sure that we do diagnose as early as possible so they can get that early intervention care.
Right. So is your son working now?
So he's in a, what we call, so a transition program that he's in. It is an amazing program. So it's sort of a private program here on Long Island. That's through, he works through it's an organic farm. And they have educational autism specialists there as well, but it is a working farm as well. And they have farmer people there too. So he learns many things on the farm, and they plant things and they pick them and they take care of the thing. And he does a lot of baking as well too, but he has, there's supervisors and there's people that he has aides that work with him, and everyone's at different levels. So depending on their level, but so he goes there every single day, which is great. And has a program that he goes to that he feels a part of.
And
right now, so he's still living at home now.
Okay.
And so again, that's like probably another whole show for you to look into, you know, figuring out long-term, you know, residences for, you know, kids and young adults of various ages and abilities that really will, you know, meet their functioning needs and their, you know, and their living needs. So that's the whole like next step that we're trying to develop now.
I totally can relate. I mean, my son's in college now and he wants to be independent, you know, and that's the thing. It's just, you know, so they have a diagnosis of autism. They still want to be, you know, contributing members of the community.
And at any level that they can is important too. So, you know, I don't think my son will ever be able to work without some kind of support. And he does need 24/7 supervision and care. But, you know, the more and more that we do with him, the more that he's able to still learn and do. And it's amazing. It doesn't really just stop at 18, you know, when they leave high school. He's definitely is learning. I've seen so much following through and being able, you know, to do other work activities as well, too. And where he goes, this program that he goes to, they also find other either volunteer sites or places where he can learn. There's other places where he makes these boxes and he has to put on the stickers and the right size and for them to use for their packaging and things like that. So there's like so many different things, but it sort of takes, as you probably know, a village of mothers and educators and things to really bring it all together. And it's hard because the program that he is in, it's very small. And that one of the reasons why it works is because it is very small. And there's a lot of, as I said, supervision and, so it's really hard. If it gets too big, then it gets watered down, and then they're not getting really the services that these kids need who have more intensive needs. So it's this balancing act because there's so many kids and young adults that need these help and services. So you know, obviously, hoping there'll be more government intervention and programs that can be opened up for young adults as well too.
What's the name of the program?
So it's called the Elijah Transition Program.
Okay.
And it's in Huntington, New York.
Okay, cool. So I'd like to switch gears because, you know, the podcast, we're going to be talking about COVID-19 vaccines.
Yes.
I'd like to talk about first COVID-19 and its presentation in kids. So my son has seasonal allergies and well-controlled asthma. How can parents and kids differentiate between seasonal allergies, the common cold, and COVID?
So my first thing I'm going to say is it's extremely difficult for parents. So it's not really your job. You don't have to know that. If you're seeing anything that's different or unusual, or at this time, you have to be honest, check in with your pediatrician. We don't mind at all. I love it. People call, I want to know what's happening. And they may very well need to be tested. So with kids, it's running the gamut of symptoms. And it can really be very, very mild. To be honest, I'm seeing much more mild cases than really severe cases. And yeah, so people say, oh, it's just a cold, or, mm-hmm. oh, you know, they had a little stomach upset or what have you. And it ends up being COVID, and they're not very sick. But as you know, the issue with kids is they can still pass it along to parents or grandparents or other people.
Right, right.
Neighborhood. So it is important to be diagnosed, you know, and or to be quarantined so that they don't really spread it around. But yeah, I'm seeing kids with basically just a runny nose, sometimes a cough, really not that much fever, but certainly it can have fever. Mm-hmm. And kids seem to have much more GI systems, symptoms, being it vomiting, stomach pain, or diarrhea as well.
Oh,
so
okay.
Yeah, it really can run the gamut.
Right. So COVID vaccines right now are such a hot topic, and I'm not mm-hmm. sure if there's ever really been another time when people have been so interested in learning about vaccine brands and who are the manufacturers. So there's currently two vaccines available, right? Pfizer and Moderna. Can you tell us just mm-hmm. what's the basic difference between the two?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I tell parents they're, to be honest, much more similar than different. So I got the Moderna. I know you said you were vaccinated. What did uh-huh. you get?
I got Moderna also.
Okay. So, and again, you're really kind of at the mercy of what they have. So that was the week that I was at my hospital was Moderna. My partner's got Pfizer. You know, we're both really protected. So it's, to me, it's like Coke and Pepsi almost. They're both beverages. They're both colas, but they're a little bit different. The issue with the Pfizer is more not with how the vaccine is working, but it's how you have to store it. So you need the deep freeze for that. And so it can be more difficult, again, to get it out into the community, to people as well.
Right.
Well, the Moderna will be a little bit easier. They're both two doses of vaccines. They both really have similar side effects, obviously. And that's normal to get these side effects. You can have soreness or redness at the injection site. You can feel flu-y or achy. Mm-hmm. You can have a headache and, you know, tired for a day or two. Some people even have some stomach upset, and you may have nothing. You may just feel perfectly well. And again, really you're really not seeing that much difference with either one of the vaccines, but yeah. So at this point, you know, anyone who's available to get the vaccine, I really would urge whichever vaccine is available mm-hmm. is fine to give.
So we both completed the two vaccines, right? And so like you yes. said, I had the Moderna, the second dose. I actually had my second dose yesterday morning. Can you just share with us what your experience was like getting the vaccine for, you know, our audience who's curious, like what is sure. like the procedure like?
Yeah, it was, so mine was really quick. So I got mine at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, where I'm affiliated with, where I see babies and children. And you know, it was really, really easy. Basically, it was just like going when you get your flu shot. Mm-hmm. They ask you a few questions to make sure that you don't have any allergies. And then, you know, they prep your arm. And I don't know how you tell me how you felt. It's a very tiny, very, very, very small amount with mm-hmm. a really small needle. The actual injection does not really hurt at all. I mean, I thought it was nothing. And I was fine. And then they make you, wherever you are, they should make you wait 15 minutes just to make sure you don't have an acute reaction right away, like anything, difficulty breathing or any kind of allergic reaction or skin rashes or hives or anything. And so you sort of, you sit for 15 minutes and make sure that you're okay. And then really, I went right back to my office and, you know, I worked that day and I was totally fine then. So that was great.
Right.
Yeah. And then I did feel the next day though, you know, I woke up, my arm was sore mm-hmm. and then I did feel, you know, not terrible, a little bit under the weather. And it's okay, you know, to take some Tylenol or some ibuprofen. And once I took that, I felt, you know, I felt much better. I was fine. So that was, I felt that was really helpful.
So that's interesting. Cause that was like the next question I was going to ask you, because is it okay to pre-medicate and post-medicate? You already said that you took Tylenol and Motrin.
Well, I didn't pre-medicate. Yeah. So I think if you, you know, I'm even now with vaccines that we give children, we used to always pre-medicate, tell you to give Tylenol. We don't do that anymore.
Even
if you have a reaction, again, a sore arm or redness, it actually means your immune system is working. It's doing what it's supposed to do. And so even when kids have fever, when they're sick, if they're feeling okay, you know, we never even say give Tylenol or give Motrin. You want your body to work. It's only if you're really feeling terrible, right?
Yeah.
You have to balance the two. So if you're really feeling achy and terrible and you can't get up and you can't go to work and what have you, then yes, it's fine to do, but you don't want to take it round the clock. It's not necessary to do that.
Right. I actually, like after I had the first dose, about 30 hours later, I had a headache. And then I took Tylenol, but it didn't help. And I was trying to avoid taking Motrin. So I did eventually take Motrin and then it worked. But then yesterday after I had my first dose, probably like 4 hours later, I had like a headache and closer to like a, cause I get migraines. It was more like a kind of like a migraine headache. And then I took Tylenol, still had a headache this morning, but then now like I ended up taking Tylenol again. And then I don't drink caffeine, but I ended up just, you know, drinking like some black tea and then now it's fine.
So it's funny that you said that, cause I had a similar reaction. I was going to say, I seemed like I was fine 24. And then about 30 hours later, I did get a headache. And it's interesting that you said that because I'm a migraine sufferer too.
Mm-hmm.
So very severe migraines. And so this was actually a bit of a different headache. It was like, it was more like sort of more above my eyes and behind my eyes. And I agreed, it didn't really go away. And I did have to take like a good dose of ibuprofen, Motrin, you know, for it to help that.
Right. So yes, for our listeners, it is a two dose series, right? So the first dose tells our immune system to just wake up and pay attention. It's like a primer. And then the second dose, we have the second dose because it tells our immune system to remember it and not to forget. And like you said, it's like, it's good. It's like our body is working.
Right. And we do know, you know, it's great if we can get everyone to eventually have the two doses because it increases the efficacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what's important too. So really having that second booster dose really does boost your immune system. And so when you do come in contact with COVID, your body's like, aha, I know what to do now.
Right.
Let me wake up.
So what happens after the vaccine? I mean, what does it mean in terms of mask wearing and the precautions?
So it's so important to continue. I can't say this strongly enough, to continue to wear your mask. So just because, you know, I'm honored and I'm so happy that, you know, as a healthcare worker and seeing patients, I am able to have the vaccine, so I won't pass it on. But again, we don't really know a couple of things yet. So obviously we're not sure how long it's going to last yet, right? We're hoping it's going to last for over a year, maybe more. We don't really know. We're seeing how some of the new variants that are coming, that the vaccine seems fine and working against. And there may be other variants that we're not really sure yet if it's going to be as effective. It may be, but it may not be as much. And so it's really still important to wear your masks. You don't want to spread anything or you could, you know, still get anything as well too. So it doesn't really change at this point your behavior until we really have herd immunity, meaning enough people or super high percentage of people vaccinated, you know, or immune,
right,
to COVID. And we're going to have, you know, where it answers, anyone who tells you we have all the answers, we don't, because we're going through it step by step and we're collecting the data along the way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you've had COVID, should you still get the vaccine?
Yeah. So they're saying that you definitely can still get the vaccine if you've had COVID, because again, we don't know how long those antibodies last. So the assumption or what's been shown so far is that it's looking, hopefully, that the antibodies from the vaccine will last even longer than just getting COVID. So usually, you know, we don't really know. It could be 3 months, it could be 6 months from having COVID, but we're hoping that the immune response is even stronger from these mRNA vaccines so far that are out there.
Right. Because I've seen like, I think CDC said that you can wait 90 days.
So basically, right? I think they're saying that you don't have to wait 90 days, but you can, because you do have some protection. Right. So, you know, I'm like, if you can get it, I would just get it, right. Because you don't want to then get stuck and maybe not be able to get it as easily if your time comes, but you do have protection already. So I don't say you're double dipping, which is fine, but you just want to be able to get it. So if you can't get it and you've had it, you know, don't panic, because you probably are protective because you just had it. We just don't know how long, we can't tell you how long that will be for.
Right. So after getting vaccinated, can you still get COVID? I know people have been asking me this. Yeah. And then, and if you do get COVID, do you think it's like not as severe or?
Yeah. So just interesting, because I'm going to tell you, you know, my story. So I actually got COVID in between my two vaccine doses. And actually probably what happened, so it's not that the vaccine didn't work. And honestly, I had it like right afterwards. So when I was answering the questions, I didn't have any symptoms. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that when I went to get vaccinated, I didn't know that I had COVID. I only know because then it came to me from a family member that I was exposed. And so then I tested myself and I had COVID. So I was one of those ones that you can look at to say, you know, is it okay? Does anything happen? Mm-hmm. So I don't think, so it was fine. Nothing happened. It didn't make, you know, it didn't make it super bad, but I still had some reaction to when I was time. So by the time I finished being sick, 10 days later, it was still another week or so till I was getting my second vaccine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was concerned myself because of those stories that you hear that I'm going to have a really, really bad reaction, but I didn't. You know, I think it's hard to know. I could have had the same reaction with or without the getting it. So I don't think you can really say that you're going to have a very bad reaction if you had it, because that wasn't my experience.
Right, right. And you mentioned already a little bit before, like in terms of longevity of the vaccine, we kind of don't know, but what's the word? Does it seem like it's kind of going to be like the annual flu vaccine as opposed to something like measles vaccine?
Yeah. So I think we don't really know yet, but from the experts. So again, when we're talking about things like medicine, I like to listen to the experts who, you know, really study vaccines and work. And they seem to think it should really be at least a year, probably a few years. Mm-hmm. So that would be great. Yeah. Again, the only thing that would change if there were new variants or things that it wasn't working for, but they're thinking that this should work for quite a while.
Oh, okay.
On these strains. So that's great news.
Mm-hmm. And then, and we're still, Johnson & Johnson, I think, is going to be like presenting their findings also. So that's going to be something on the horizon.
Yeah. So what's exciting about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is it's just one dose. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit easier. I think they may even be studying it now to see if two doses is even better than one dose, but it's seeming that it's probably going to roll out as a one dose. Mm-hmm. And what's really important is, you know, is that people say, well, it's shown to be a little bit less effective or what have you. But if you look at all the vaccines really have had no one who has had a really severe illness or hospitalized or died of COVID. And mm-hmm. that's really what's important. I even tell people this about the flu vaccine too, because people always say, oh, well, I still got the flu, you know, and I had my flu vaccine. Mm-hmm. And that's possible. But if you look at like children who have died of flu, it's really rare if they've been vaccinated. But if they haven't been vaccinated, so they're much more likely to be hospitalized or really sick if you weren't vaccinated. And that seems to be the same thing carrying through for COVID. And so, I mean, nobody wants to be sick for a few days or have a headache and body aches and be in bed. But, you know, if you know that's going to happen and it's not going to be so severe that you have to be hospitalized or need oxygen or anything like that, or long-term effects. And, you know, that to me, that's a win.
Exactly. Yeah. So backtracking on measles, we can now say that scientific evidence shows that or has shown that there's no link between vaccines and autism. And the CDC, American Academy of Pediatrics and NIH, they agree that vaccines don't cause autism. Do you still notice a fair amount of parents not wanting to vaccinate their kids because of autism or?
I think I'm seeing less and less.
Okay.
I think when all the stuff from England, it got debunked and what have you, mm-hmm. you know, I think it took a long time because as you're seeing now with things, there's so much misinformation. And then, you know, it's scary, right? People want to blame the autism on something, or, you know, it's just easier to do something external to worry about. And, you know, and yes, so they get shots when they're little. So maybe it must have been this because they were fine before. You know, and there's no, it's not, it's there's correlation, but not causation. And so then it took years and years of studying populations who had the measles vaccine and those that didn't, and then looking at, you know, the amount of children who then were diagnosed with autism to show. And so it takes years to do these things, because this was happening again when your son and my son were little, right? They're in the midst, and then they came out with all this data 10 years later and two decades later now, really showing that there really is no correlation between the two, no causation either. So I think I'm seeing less of it. There obviously there's still quite a big anti-vax out there, but in patients who are truly, you know, asking questions and maybe a little hesitant, you know, when presented with the information, they're seeming to be, is what I'm seeing, you know, understanding that there's no causation. Yeah.
Right, right. So let's talk about like vaccine safety with the COVID vaccine. Is it okay to get the vaccine if a woman's pregnant or breastfeeding?
So, you know, I'm a pediatrician, but many of the organizations for OBGYN and what have you, they say it's important decision to speak. Everyone's situation is a little bit different. And that you really should have a discussion with your OBGYN and obviously also your pediatrician. There doesn't seem to be any, I know many physicians who are pregnant, who are breastfeeding, who are giving it. Doesn't really, you know, from all the other vaccines that we have, there's no reason to think that you can't breastfeed and have a vaccine at all. There should be, you know, it's not going directly to the baby. We do know on the good side is that the antibodies from moms who had COVID when they were pregnant seeming to be passing over to the baby, which is protective. So there really doesn't seem to show anything that would be negative about getting the vaccine if you're pregnant or if you are breastfeeding.
Okay, that's great news.
Yeah, so that's sort of the overall stance, but it is on a case by case. You know, something personal, like obviously we're not really giving medical advice to each person, but you should speak to your own physician as well too. But it's seeming like it really should be okay. You know, one of the issues that always makes it hard is why I think that, again, we have this debate with the WHO or the World Health Organization, is because they didn't come out and say, you know, that you can give it. It's because the studies weren't done with pregnant women. And that's sort of how studies usually work. They usually, anyone who's really sick or anyone who's really old or anyone who's really young, like children, aren't usually included in these studies. So they don't have the specific data, except for those women that happen to have been pregnant and they didn't know that they were pregnant and they seem to be okay and stuff too. So from what we know and everything, it really does seem like it is safe. And you also want to look at the risks of COVID as well, because getting COVID when you're pregnant carries probably way more risks, right? Than the vaccine. Because if you get sick while you're pregnant, you have a higher rate of obviously hospitalization or being more critically ill. So again, that's why you have to weigh everyone's situation separately, individually.
Right. So what about, in terms of the COVID vaccine for kids, I think Pfizer, it's 16 years old and older, and Moderna, it's 18 and older. Is there info about when vaccines would be available for the kids?
Yeah, that's a great question. So they're doing more studies now on from like age 12 to 16, and they're doing, but it's going to take a while, it's going to take a while. I don't really know yet, because when that information is going to come out and when it's all going to be studied. So it's still looking like it's going to be quite some time for kids, but I think it will, you know. And again, so far what we're seeing is that most kids are seeming to be handling it pretty well. It's again, we just don't want them spreading it. And obviously there are some kids that, you know, certainly just like anything else, like the flu or what have you, can get really sick as well too. So we want to cover everyone's safety, but I don't really have a really good timeline. It would be nice by back to school, or at least for the older kids, but for the really young kids, it's going to be quite some time.
Yeah, That's what it sounds like. So yeah. Like, when they do get their vaccine, or even in the kids in that age range that qualify right now for the COVID vaccine, like, is what's the interval, the recommended interval to wait in terms of getting another vaccine? Let's say like it's in the fall, mm-hmm. and you know, it's time to get a flu shot. Should they wait 10 days or something?
Two parts to that. So, you know, one of the things, that's why they're studying it. So it may be that kids need, you know, kids are not just little adults. Their bodies are different. They're developing, they're growing. Their immune systems are different. So that may be why they're not getting COVID so bad to begin with. So we don't really know. Do they need the same dose? Do they need a smaller dose? Do they need mm-hmm. a larger dose? And is the 3 or 4 week, depending on, you know, Moderna or the Pfizer, is that what children need to, or do they need it? That's all that needs to be studied. So we don't really know. But another issue that you just brought up was right now vaccines, I think, to err on the safe side, they're saying that you shouldn't have another vaccine 2 weeks before or 2 weeks prior mm-hmm. to getting the COVID vaccine. So they don't want anything else to interfere with it. So it's not like some other vaccines we're giving together. They want them to be spaced out for now.
And it makes sense, because I mean, back to like the whole protocol or what happens when you get the vaccine. After I got the vaccine, I signed up for V-Safe. And so it probably makes sense yes. to like wait like a couple of weeks afterwards. So that you don't mix up like what the side effects are. If you do experience yes. side effects, like a headache, you're not going to say, oh, that was from the flu. Was that from the flu vaccine or from, correct. You know, from the COVID vaccine?
Yeah, I think, again, so we're still trying to collect data and as much information as possible. So really keeping it clean and having just the one at a time, I think really does make sense right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then just to mention to our listeners, the V-Safe, it's run by the CDC, right? And then they check on you daily for like the first, I think it was like the first week. And then after that, it was like weekly afterwards or something.
Yeah, I think so. I don't want to give the wrong information, but I'm agreeing with you. I think that's exactly what they do. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you get your second dose exactly? Cause you had Moderna and I did too. Did you get it 28 days after the first?
No, that's interesting. So I actually got, when I go for the first vaccine, before you even get your first vaccine, they allow you to sign up for your next one to make sure that you have an appointment mm-hmm. Already scheduled. And so when I was scheduling it, they told me for Moderna that there was a window, but, you know, that between 24 to 28 days. So I actually made mine on, I made mine on the 24th day, just in case there was something going on and there was an emergency and I had to change it. I would still have some time. So I made mine on the 24th day. So it was like sort of 3.5 weeks.
Okay. Yeah. Cause when I got mine, my original date was supposed to be a couple of days earlier than, so I got mine yesterday, but it was supposed to be earlier than that. And so my husband and I, so we got our first dose at the same time. And so we were wondering, we're like, okay, can we reschedule it? And how much time do we have? And it turns out now, like, the CDC updated their guidance and they're saying, you know, if it happens to be that way, because there was a snowstorm. So that's right. why we had to reschedule ours. But you have 42 days after the first right. dose.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to be honest and to be real about things, you know, again, they like to keep things as close to how they studied things as possible. But being a pediatrician, and I've been in practice, as I said, for, you know, over 2 decades, we give vaccines and sometimes, you know, and there's a minimal interval, but sometimes it goes over longer. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's okay. And we've done titers down the line and things like that. And everyone is always fine. So I think that, again, because of this is new and they want to keep within the protocol. So yeah. So I think whatever dates they say, and when they make them longer now, I think that's fine too, mm-hmm. but I think that's where it comes from. So, you know, right. just to make sure that everyone's okay. But probably if you had to wait, or if there was another thing, and, you know, I think my mom got her first one, and, just like you're saying, just because of scheduling and how it is in New York, it's very hard to get a vaccine. So even when at the day that she was signing up, it wasn't till like almost 6 weeks after. And I said, just, it's fine. It's totally fine to get it. You know, it will still work. I don't think there's going to be an issue. So, you know, that's when they said to sign up. That was the closest one. And I think that's fine.
Right. Well, speaking of our family, so like you know, they just opened up the phase 1C group in Maryland yes. for the individuals with developmental disabilities to get yes. the vaccine. How's it going in New York?
Well, that was exactly the same. I just heard that yesterday as well, too. So I was looking, planning on trying to find my son a place to get vaccinated, though I have to check today because when I checked, I heard the news from the governor. But when I checked online, that wasn't still one of the options. Like it wasn't there. And so they kept kicking me out saying that, you know, he wasn't able to be vaccinated yet. But yeah, I think I think it was the same thing. So they said that you could sign up, but I'm not seeing it happening yet. And I know it's still difficult for people in even in the 1B to get vaccinated. So I'm hoping that supposedly in the next, you know, couple of weeks, they'll have more big sites and places opened up, stadiums, even things, you know, colleges or, you know, anything. I would say any place that let them do it. And I really think, and I'm not sure, not getting political here, but I don't understand why they haven't given it out to doctor's offices yet. I mean, we are so good at giving vaccines. Like this is what we do. You know, we're, and my staff is great at it and we know how to do it. And so it would seem like even before giving it to pharmacies, if they gave it to the doctor's offices where we can give it out to our patients, that would just go really, really quickly.
Exactly. So, yeah.
You know, people keep asking why I'm not doing it. And I'm like, I'm signed up, but they won't send it to me. Right. And now as a pediatrician, even later, obviously, even though I have, you know, lots of young adults or special needs as well, too. So it's a little, it's frustrating for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, when I found out that he was eligible to get the vaccine, so I called around, but I think the issue right now also is distribution.
Yeah.
It's just, there's just not enough vaccines. Yeah. And so either way, he's going to have to,
wait.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that as of February 1st, 26.5 million Americans had received one or both doses of the current vaccines.
Yes.
And data has showed that more people were vaccinated than were reported as newly diagnosed cases. Dr. Jen, what would you say to those with vaccine hesitancy?
Yeah. So I there definitely is still a lot of vaccine hesitancy. And I, you know, I understand because it is new. And so anything new can be frightening. But as I said, you know, I think it's different where, you know, speak to people who are on the front and, you know, the doctors and the nurses and the people that are there, because I could not believe what Mount Sinai, you know, back in March, April, May with all the patients, you know, the makeshift, the whole hallways, the whole downstairs, you know, tumbling out across the street. We had makeshift tents and things. Unbelievable. I never saw anything like this in my life. I never thought I would see anything like this and how scary it is and patients alone without having family members by them. You know, you just don't know who's going to get that sick. And, you know, the vaccine, as I said, it's very safe. It's been tested. It has not been rushed through all the measures and all the steps that were needed. I think what people don't know is that there was just so much funding because we wanted to get this done. And that's why it was not held up. Usually vaccines, nobody really cares about it. They're not making money or what have you. And so they don't have enough capital or money to really test the vaccines at each of the different stages. Not that each stage takes so much longer. So there was nothing that was skimped and what have you. And, you know, it's just so important for you, for yourself, for your family, for your loved ones, for the community. And, you know, you can, again, see all these, you know, doctors, nurses, first responders who are really, really, you know, saying how important it is.
Well, that concludes our podcast for today. Thank you, Dr. Jen, for sharing your story and helping to educate and empower us. We wish you and your family all the very best. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. Stay well, and I will talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Autism Mom MD podcast. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend, spread the word, and leave a review on iTunes. For any questions, comments, or suggestions for topics you'd like to hear on the podcast, please join our Facebook group, Autism Mom MD, or visit us on the web at www.autismmommd.com.